This is a fun new angle.
What's
that that new thing? That's new.
Oh yeah,
just in case you forget where you work. Hey everybody, this is Mark in San Francisco,
and this is Gordon in Boston,
and this is Build Phase. Your beard's looking healthy.
It's getting there, man. I comb it. my wife's like, why the hell is there a comb in the bathroom? It's for my beard. Just get like a stare.
You have to be all super aware about what you eat now, like, because things will get stuck in your mustache.
Oh yeah. Oh man.
Like, I no drink- smoothies.
No,
smoothies
see, that's out. The thing is, I drink a smoothie every morning. But I have to do it, like, in complete privacy, like, where no one can see me, because it's just, like, it's horrible. Bagels and cream cheese, that's another one that's really not, oh. That's not a good public consumption food. Most everything else is okay. It's getting there.
Yeah, before it just looked like extended stubble.
But yeah.
This week, it's like
it's getting
like it's measurably off of your face now.
Yeah,
like
yeah, it's getting good, man. I'm excited. My wife is actually not horrified by it, which is great because it means that I can like I won't get divorced for trying to grow it. But also awful because it's just weird encouragement to just like not shave it off. My plan is to just grow it all year. Like, I'll trim it, but just 2014, this is what I'm doing. This is my goal for 2014, is grow a ridiculous beard.
Is this all part of your New Year's resolution to learn Haskell?
Yeah, they're definitely related.
Makes sense to me.
Sure. I did put, like the week after I started growing a beard, put, like, 40 pounds on my back squat, 30 pounds on my push press. Just really, really impressive.
That sounds pretty empirical to me.
Yeah, no, it's totally cause and effect. There's no other way to explain it.
I'm just picturing like you get most of the way there and then like zoom in on your follicles and they're like, Ben, heave! Like, you just get that extra 40 pounds.
Yeah, works well. I'm happy with it. It's also good because like I don't have a whole lot of other protection from the elements on my head, so
that's one way to say it.
Yeah. I figure if I can't protect the top half, I may as well protect the bottom half.
Right.
Sure. There was a point this is so dumb. There was a point where like it was brutally, brutally cold for like a week straight. Just like awfully cold, like negative temps, wind, awful. And so I started like bringing a scarf. Right. And just like, I mean, I walked to the bus at ungodly hours, right? It's like 6:30 in the morning when I walk to the bus. So it's pitch black outside, brutally cold. And I'm like hating life for a good half a mile while I walk over to the bus. And so I was like, oh man, it must look so sketchy too. Cause I'm just like walking down the street and I've just got this scarf wrapped around my face, like exposing as little skin as possible. You know what I mean? Like I had a little slit between my beanie and my scarf for my eyes to look out of. But then I started growing a beard and I was like, well, this is a waste. Like this is when beards look awesome, is when it's like brutally cold and you're like snow in your beard and like that dude's hard.
Yeah.
So now I don't wear a scarf.
Look like you just came back from a patrol on Hoth.
Right, exactly.
Riding your Tauntaun back into Echo Base.
Yeah, way to make this nerdy.
Check it out, ladies. See all the snow in my beard?
Anyway, what you been up to?
Code.
Yeah. Good talk. Should we read this email out? This is literally the best email. Oh, did you see who it's from?
No, I was hoping you would read our spam. It's a little backstory. We have a good spam filter on the Build Phase email, but it does like send us an occasional digest of some of the spam email that we've received.
I have a theory that this is all of the spam email that we receive, and that Google Group spam filter just sends you their spam, but they tell you it's spam. which is weird. But so, yeah, every now and then we get these, like, really bad emails, and it's, like, from Google, because all of our, because buildphase at thoughtbot.com is, like, run through a Google group. And, but this one today is awesome. It's from, quote, sexy lingerie.
I think I've met that guy at a meetup.
Yeah. And the email is, "Dear sirs, glad to get your contact info from internet." Capital I in internet.
That's how it's spelled.
Yeah. "We supply underwear and baby wear with good quality and very competitive price. Hope to be a partner of your company. E-catalog will be provided if needed. Email me or just call me," and then no email address and no phone number. So anyway, I'm replying because we're definitely interested. I think we can get some build phase, like, 90s. I think it'd be good.
So if you're interested in this sort of thing, email us. We're going to take a head count. If we can get, like, 20 people who want to sign up for this, maybe we'll do a run.
Yeah.
Of build phase lingerie. It makes a great gift.
You'd be popular. Oh, God. Okay. That's so stupid. Other than spam.
Do we have real things to talk about, or can we just make this one a goof around episode?
Oh, there was something that I wanted to talk about, but I can't remember. It may end up being a goof around episode anyway.
I'm pretty hopped up on lunch.
Are you?
Yeah.
That's weird.
I had a great burrito, so I'm ready to go.
What the hell happened this week? There was something that happened, and I didn't want to talk about that, but I wanted to talk about something tangential to it.
Like Apple News related, or?
It was like...
that happened to you?
No. This isn't it, but I did see a guy, going back to goofiness, I did see a guy trying to get into the liquor store who was obviously shit-faced. He was trying to get into a liquor store at 6:30 in the morning. Super confused. I've never seen anyone that confused in my life. But he was like... Like, I saw him walking towards me, and I was like, that guy is wasted. Because the bus stop is, like, next to the liquor store. And then he was like, he just, like, walked into the sliding door. Like, he just assumed he was going to open 6:30 in the morning. Why not? Tried to walk into the store, walked in the sliding door, looked very confused, knocking on the door, like, peering in. He kind of, like, did one of those, like, two steps back and, like, looking around to see if anyone else saw this craziness that he was seeing.
That's dedication. Was the sun coming up? Was it still dark?
Yeah, no, the sun was up. The sun was up. The sun's up now at 6:30 in the morning, which is nice.
You have liquor stores open every day of the week there in Massachusetts?
Yeah. It wasn't like that until like recently though.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it used to be closed on Sundays. I don't know when that changed. And I don't even know if I was here when that changed.
It wasn't this KVO controller from Facebook, was it?
Mm-mm. I didn't even look at that.
It's cool. It's similar to a pattern I saw in Objective-C.io recently, where you build a wrapper around a single key value observation, and then it's set up so that when that thing gets dealloced, it removes itself as an observer.
Mm-hmm.
So you never have to worry about dangling observers or anything like that.
Hmm.
So it's just a class method. You just observe this object, the key path, the options. In my case, in the way I'm using it, target selector.
Hmm.
This Facebook one takes a block. You know, different strokes.
Sure. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I hadn't looked at that. Oh, right. The unreachable code thing. I don't know. We could talk about style.
Oh, you're talking about the app code being snarky on Twitter.
Well, I mean, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the go-to fail bug. And I mean, my Twitter feed was just full of people saying, like, this is why you use braces always, right? You don't care.
I mean, I use braces now because that's the style guide we agreed on.
Mm-hmm.
But originally, no, not right. For a single line. But I was under the impression that if it's a single line and you try to put two in there, it's not going to indent properly. I thought it would throw an error.
Try to put two in there, no. But like if you insert it above, it's not going to change the... Should we go over what the actual thing is? So... Is this just a C thing? In C, you don't need... Yeah, it's got to be a C thing. In C, if a conditional only has a single line for a branch of a conditional, you don't need to use braces to surround that line. So you can do if condition, you can do a new line break, or you can do it on the same line, but you don't need braces around the result of that condition passing. And I'd assume most people know, but if you don't know, there was a bug in OS X and iOS to do with SSL where the bug was caused by the fact that there was one of these conditionals without a brace, and it had two lines. So it had – it's weird. They were using a go-to statement, which is, you know, whatever, weird. So what was supposed to happen is that the conditional pass was supposed to – the go-to fail. But it almost looks like there was like a bad merge or something where go-to fail got printed twice. So instead of there only being one line below the conditional, there were two lines below the conditional. But the problem there is that what would happen is if the conditional fails, it wouldn't hit the first go-to fail, but the second go-to fail isn't encapsulated inside that conditional, so it would always hit that go-to statement, always. If it, like, and the first two conditionals just kick out to the same thing. So there's no way it would not end up going into this fail portion of the code.
Right. So every condition that came after that second go-to fail was effectively unreachable.
Right. There's no way to get there.
You would always hit that second go-to fail. It was being interpreted as not being part of the conditional, just like a line in the method, and would always jump.
Right. Yeah. Even though it was indented under the conditional, right? So a lot of people, you know, started saying that, like, well, this is why you should always use braces around your single line, even if it's just a single line conditional, just because stuff like this probably wouldn't happen if you do use braces to be explicit about the scope of that conditional branch. Does that make sense? Is that a good way to say it?
Yeah. I think it's a better case for testing, though. If this really was a bad merge.
Oh, at 110%.
Like, if this was, you know, if this had to run through tests, like, you would have caught this immediately.
Immediately. 110%. This should have been tested. There was another guy that actually wrote tests for this, and he wrote a failing test case very, very easily for this function that would have caught this bug. Like, this is a very stupid bug that has apparently been around for a very long time, 2 years. It was in iOS 6.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how far back it goes on OS 10, but
I think they said, I think I read actually 10.8.2.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's a very stupid bug that 100% could have been caught by code or caught by unit testing easily. But also the bug, it's not like it was caused by code style decision, but I think that the coding, the style decision made it harder to catch the bug manually, not through testing, but manually. You know what I'm saying?
I think so. I mean,
I think you could, I'm saying, I think you could skim this and not see anything wrong. Like in a code review probably should have picked this up, but I can see skimming this file and being like, well, nothing looks immediately out of place. So when this got posted, I like read it. And I was like, I don't think I fully, like, I skipped the fact that it was in conditional or something. I was just focusing on the two go-to fails next to each other. And I was like, well, that's stupid, but I don't see the bug. And then I realized that it was a single line conditional and there was no braces. And I was like, oh, okay, that's the bug. I think most people's argument for the braces is that it's more explicit and it's harder to cause this kind of issue unintentionally. Like, I can see someone that doesn't know the, isn't paying attention, right? And bad code's bad code, bad developers are bad developers, whatever. But I can see someone, for example, like, instead of, like, you're right, if I went to the end of the first go-to fail and I hit enter, the indentation would take over and it would drop me back to the first indentation level. So I'd have to manually put myself to tabs over. But if I go to the end of the conditional and hit return, it's not going to fix the indentation for the second go-to fail. It's only going to put me in the right position for my go-to fail, right?
If you had the braces.
If I don't have the braces. If I don't have the braces and I enter a new line from the conditional as opposed to entering a new line below the go-to statement, right? Like, if I'm trying to replicate this manually in Xcode, if I add a new line immediately below the conditional, it doesn't change the indentation of the line that was already inside the conditional.
Oh,
it doesn't drop that back.
Oh, I get it. So you're assuming, So assuming this, that like a developer did this, they're actually dropping from the conditional line to the next line,
which leaves the existing indentation intact and also puts you in the indentation. I don't think this was caused by a developer. This is a super unbelievably contrived example of like how the indentation can lie to you and how Xcode won't actually help you at this point. Because yeah, like if I create the new line from the line that's already inside the conditional, Xcode will help me and it will drop my indentation level back. But if I create the new line from the line of the conditional, it will indent me properly, but it won't fix the indentation for the line that was there. Versus if there's braces, the whole thing will be indented anyway, and this wouldn't happen. It'd be stupid code, right?
Right. I'll argue for braces if it just keeps us from ever having crazy-ass discussions about how bugs can happen because the IDE doesn't indent properly.
Right.
So I kind of wonder what Apple's process is for getting code into like a production branch or like what's their workflow? How do they work? The only thing I know is that you're responsible for your own bugs.
Sure.
So if you check in something and it has a bug, that's on you.
Yeah.
But beyond that, do they do code review? Throw everything in there and then let it go to QA?
I don't know. I know that I don't know. But I get the feeling that they're not using extensive testing, except for stuff like, they've said core data is tested. To what extent, I don't know. You know what I mean? But they said core data is tested. It's obvious that their SSL stuff isn't tested. I have no idea.
I'd hope since they're shipping their own test stuff now, then they're really pushing on XC tests that like new projects are taking advantage of it, at least in some fashion. Like I can kind of see that like if this SSL library has been hanging around for a long time, I can understand it. Like it wasn't tested then. No one's going back to like cover it with tests now.
They must have changed something in the past 2 years. They touched this file in the last 2 years. You know, I don't know what was changed. It shouldn't be hard. It's part of the like their open source.
Yeah, is this Core Foundation?
Is that where this code is? I actually don't know, but I know that the source is open. That's how everyone found the bug. You could do a diff and you could figure out what changed between, iOS 5 and iOS 6 that caused that, like, why did they touch this file? But someone touched this file. And so if they were obviously touching this file without tests backing whatever they were touching. So it's not like in the past 2 years they've had this, like, come to Jesus moment with testing and they were like,
right,
oh, test all new code. Cool.
Well, my point was like maybe they were in there fixing something, but they didn't have the leeway to say, I should wrap all of this in tests.
It's not wrapping. I mean, like it's not wrapping everything in tests, but theoretically, like if you are moving towards a heavily tested code base, right? Like you have legacy code that has no tests and now you're saying, from now on, we're testing everything, then you would write tests for what you change, or you'd write tests, like I said, like the test for this specific function, I have to look it up, but it's not like it took the guy, he didn't come out with it a week after the bug was found. He said, hey, here's a failing test case that they could have used to test this function, that it would have prevented this bug from ever happening. And he came out with that like an hour or two after I first saw this code. So it's not like there was a huge time sink here to test this function. And they were obviously testing it. And, I don't know. It's easy to say that they should have written a test. And it's easy to say that they should be testing this stuff. But
well, especially given what the code is.
Yeah, it seems pretty critical. The fact that like software update was vulnerable blows my mind. It's like that was the joke in Campfire when the update came out. It's like, but did it really come out? It's like there's no way to know.
worrying.
Yes.
I don't think it was intentional sabotage. I think it's too clever
for
that.
No, that's stupid. Yeah, no, there's no way that it was intentional.
I hope not.
They could have figured out a clever way, more clever way to do this. You know what I mean?
But could they? I mean, it took us 2 years to figure this out, a year and a half.
That's a good point.
I'd say it is pretty clever.
I don't know. Do you know what the I got to figure out what the GCC or Clang warning is for that
I think it's just unreachable. I think it's just unreachable. Dash W unreachable.
Yeah, but I need to figure out not the command line flag but the one that you set in Xcode, because it's different. Like, I could set this on other C flags.
Mm.
Whatever. I'll figure this out later. I want to add it to liftoff if it's not on by default. Have you used AppCode at all?
No. I've seen it used. A guy that worked at a former client was using it extensively.
I have a license. I don't want it Cocoa Heads, but I don't think I've ever... I redeemed the license, but I don't think I've launched it since then. I think I just can't see myself moving to a different IDE. I don't see how that's valuable for me to move to a different IDE from Xcode. If I was going to move away from Xcode, I would move towards Vim, right? I would do the legwork and figure out a way to work in Vim while still being able to have Xcode project files and all that. Like, everything else worked the same, which is an insane amount of overhead, and which is why I don't do it. But,
well, you'd still need Xcode for Interface Builder.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Oh.
But you still need Xcode. I mean, they have an interface thing in AppCode too. Like, they can read and write interface files, which is crazy because those things are undocumented, and that sketches me out a little bit.
Yeah.
But that's my point, right? Is that you already, if you're moving to AppCode, and there's people that love AppCode, and I know AppCode does some really cool stuff. It has some really great integration with like CocoaPods and Kiwi specifically, like really great integration with those. And I know it has a bunch of other like crazy refactoring tools that Xcode doesn't have. But more than anything, like I feel like I want Xcode to get out of my way more and more. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
So I can't see myself moving to another thing that may have all these cool features. Like, how many times have you used the refactoring tools in Xcode?
I use it a lot, but 99% of the time it's renaming.
Yeah, that's the only one that I use is rename, right?
Yeah, I've never done like extract class.
I think I used extract method once.
Oh.
I used extract method once, and it took me longer to use that than it would have just for me to cut and paste the code into a new method and write it out myself.
Yeah, and most of that time is just spent scanning the project.
Right.
Like, you sit there.
Right.
Does something.
Yeah.
And there's your refactor.
Dumb.
The only thing I like about AppCode, and I want this in Xcode so bad, is that if I reference a new class in the code, just import it for me. And also, by the same token, like, keep a list of all the things that I'm using in this class. So if I remove some code and that was the last reference to this class, take that import out.
Yep.
The thing that kills me is constantly scrolling to the top of my file to put imports in.
But do you think that your IDE managing that stuff is a solution, or do you think that removing the need to import stuff is a solution?
Oh, well, removing the need to import things is obviously the best solution, but I don't see that happening anytime soon. But I mean, if AppCode can do it, I'm sure Xcode could do it too.
It just feels like a lot of the things Xcode and AppCode brag about feel like things that are just making up for deficiencies in the language. Or if not, you know, strict deficiencies, like importing everything needs to, you know, even, you know, Ruby, you need to require, like, Rails does crazy magic stuff. But if I'm writing a Ruby, like liftoff has a liftoff.rb. where it imports, it calls require, which is like the same thing as import. And it requires all the different modules that I have set up, or the different classes. So you still need to do that, but it's done at a single level. So like, once I require it, you know, like the internal classes to liftoff, for example, when I require them in liftoff RB, when I reference those classes later on It's just there. It's almost like shoving everything into the prefix, which is a horrible idea and I don't like. But that's only because I know the way the prefix is used, right? And like it feels weird to – or I know I know the way the prefix is supposed to be used, and I know the way import actually works, where it's actually just copying and pasting code into a header file. And every time I see import UIKit, I see like hundreds of thousands of lines. Like that's just what I see, right? My brain does that expansion.
That's a nice trick.
Yeah.
Like I knew that, but why did you have to bring that to my attention? Because now I'm going to think about that. Every time I import something, I'm like, oh.
Was that modules? It was the video on modules when the guy was like, the guy from Apple. It's like one of those awesome things that Apple does where they were like, hey, we think this would be pretty cool to add to the language. And, you know, he had this whole presentation on modules, and here's this theoretical implementation of modules and why they would be kind of neat. And then, like, 6 weeks later, they just added modules to Objective-C. Like, they do that with WebKit, too, right, where they're just like – or not WebKit, but, like, WC3 specs or whatever, where they're just like, hey, we think this would be really neat, which is just code for like, hey, we built this thing in WebKit like 6 months ago, so it's going to be a thing soon. You may want to get on board. But no, it was that modules video. In that modules video, he did this like this graph of like, here's your class header, and it was like, you know, and then you import this other class header, and it's like, oh, wow, that was a lot of lines. And then you import coco.h, and it was like a stack graph kind of a thing. So, like, each import was, like, full-width graph. This is going to be really hard to describe over radio, but whatever. It was like a stack graph. So it was, like, it zoomed out, basically, and you couldn't see the other two imports just because coco.h imports all this crap. And what it's doing is the compiler is actually just like copying and pasting that crap into your header. That's how the header system works. And that's why modules – that's one of the things modules are designed to not do, which is nice. But what else? Where was I? I'm tired. I had coffee and I'm tired. The elevators were stuck and we had to walk up 7 floors.
That's not surprising.
It's awful.
The Boston office is notoriously terrible with their elevators. Yeah. How many times have ThoughtBot employees become trapped in an elevator?
3 times in 8 months. Hasn't happened for a while.
It's always Gabe's fault.
It's always Gabe's fault. 100% of the time it's Gabe's fault. First time we had 12 people in the elevator. Which is really impressive if you've seen the elevators, because you can fit like 6 people in there comfortably. Anything over 6 is like very uncomfortable. So there were 12 people coming back from lunch or getting coffee, and they got stuck in the elevator. And then like a few months later, there were 9 of us in the elevator, and I got stuck that time. We were in there for like 40 minutes. It sucked. And then the last time, there were only 5 people in the elevator. And it got stuck again. But it got stuck because when the firemen broke us out the previous time, they broke the door to the elevator. And so it was like slightly ajar. So at one point, the elevator was like, nope, a door is open. I'm just stopping here now. Like, so. But it was funny, like the firemen were like comparing stories on when they were here. Like, oh, no, hold on. Don't do that. Last time we were here, we went this way and it worked much better. It's like. I had technique down. Tony broke Xcode. He just goes, hey, so I might have broken Xcode. I'm like, what the hell? What did you do? He was like working on some hacking thing, like with private libraries inside of Xcode. And so I don't even know why he wanted to do this, but he was like, I found this tool called image name tool, and I ran it on a private library inside Xcode. He's like, I'm not really sure what it does, but I ran it on a private library inside Xcode, and I may or may not have used sudo. So
he did.
Yeah, he totally did.
Definitely.
He goes, so the good news is my tool works. The bad news is that none of this other stuff does. He's like, so I wouldn't do that. It's like, yeah, man, there's like literally no way I would run some random tool using sudo on some random internal library. And so now he's posting, he's like, unable to load platform at path applications xcode.app contents developer platforms iPhone OS.platform.
Yeah, you'll be fine.
Oh, man. This is to make up for us saying good things about him last week as we got it.
Did you read that article from the Rap Genius engineering team? It's called Objective-C Isn't What You Think It Is If You Think Like a Rubyist.
Yeah. I don't remember what I thought of it. Did you
read it? I remember thinking it's a bunch of Ruby engineers figuring out that there's these things called compilers, yeah, and that sometimes they help. That's what I took away from this.
And categories. Like, they described categories really weird. Oh, they said categories are like open class, which is weird.
Here's a question for you.
Yeah.
What is the difference between a Ruby string and a Ruby symbol?
Strings are discrete objects. At a basic level, every string is one object. So, quote, foo, quote, does not equal quote, foo, quote. I don't think. Like, they're not the same object, right? Just like in Objective-C, right? If I create two string literals, they are not the same object. They have a different, like, object ID.
Oh, so doing is equal in Ruby is also doing pointer comparison?
Equals equals, I think.
Yeah.
No, it does like, value checking. But if I do foo.objectID and another time, no, it's giving me a different. So it gives you a different object every time. It actually does give you a different object every time. So if I do foo as a string dot object ID, I get one crazy number. And then if I do the exact same thing again, I did get a different object, right? But if I do colon foo, so symbol foo dot object ID, and I do the same thing again, symbol foo dot object ID, it's the exact same object. So every time they're constants, every time you create a symbol, it sticks around. That's why it's used a lot for, instead of strings, for keys in dictionaries, is because you can create a bunch of dictionaries with the same key and it doesn't create different string objects for all of those keys, right? It creates one symbol foo and then uses that same symbol foo as for everything.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm sure that there's other differences. That's the main one that I know of. Do we have anything else to talk about?
No. My burrito high is over.
You want to just wrap it up?
I think that's for the best.
Yeah. Okay.
We could probably just sit here in silence for 10 more minutes if you want, but.
Sure.
Oh, just okay.
Staring.
Just typing loudly.
Show notes for this episode can be found at podcasts.thoughtbot.com/buildphase/29.
And we'd like to hear from you, so email us at buildphase@thoughtbot.com or reach out on app.net or Twitter at buildphase. And as always, we would like ratings and reviews on iTunes.
All right.
All right. Later, see man. You.